What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Kevin Scarrett, and I am with Amy Zander again. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Kevin. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting topic today. I think it's one of those necessary ones where we're going to be explaining some differences in how people interpret words that are used in this industry. And the two words are brand versus identity. And there's a lot of confusion on this point. So tell us a little bit about brand, Amy.
Sure. So as we've been talking in the previous episodes about brand archetypes, your brand is how you emotionally connect with your clients and your coworkers and how people identify you in the marketplace by that emotional connection. And your identity is how you're recognized. Things like your logo and your tagline and your colors and your fonts, which we're going to talk about each one of those individually in a second. And it is definitely something that people interchange those words or get them confused, which is okay, but we're just trying to establish how we're going to talk about them going forward, brand versus identity.
Right. I think that it's okay if there are other agencies that are listening or people who have heard these terms used in the past, if they interchange them, that's not necessarily a good thing. You really should refer one to the other, but if you use them opposite of how we do, that's okay. Just as long as you understand how we're talking about. So brand is the emotion, and identity is how we are recognized, right? So I think a really great example I heard years ago was someone was talking about the Coke brand, and they gave the example of, if I were to take a Coke bottle and throw it on the ground, and you got this big pile of glass in front of you, and then take a milk bottle and throw it on the ground, right next to it, you got a second pile of glass. Can you actually tell the difference between the two? And when you ask someone that, their immediate answer is, yeah, you can tell the difference. And then you waylay them with the big giant killer question, how do you know it's different? How can you tell which one is which?
Right.
And then they get a little confused look on their face, and I go, and then they give the answer, the obvious answer. It's this kind of the greenish color of the glass and the shape of the little curves on the Coke bottle glass. So that's all part of their identity, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's so interesting. You don't see Coke bottles very much anymore, but my kids always get really excited when they see glass bottles in the store. They always want to drink a Coke out of a glass bottle. It's like a novelty now.
Right. And I guess I just dated myself by referring to milk bottles.
Right. I was thinking that too. I'm like, milk bottle?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of embarrassing. I am kind of a dinosaur in internet years. So I think another really important point, and we said this in our previous podcast, that the very first thing that you should do in establishing a brand strategy is to pick your archetype first. So of these two ideas, brand versus identity, brand should come first, but man, 99.9999% of the time, it's the identity that's picked. When someone starts a company, they almost the very first thing that they do, even before they start working on the product or the service, is they want to come up with a name. And of all the processes to go through, coming up with a name is not only the hardest, but it's probably one that you should be doing like third or fourth on the list and not first on the list. And yet that's the way everybody does it. So let's talk about identity. Let's talk about how we are recognized, and then we can compare the two.
Sure. So like you said, naming a company is so hard. It's just as hard as naming a child or possibly your dog. People agonize over it, think about it. Hopefully they're agonizing over it and thinking about it and putting a lot of thought into it. It is the first thing that people will know about your company. And naming doesn't have to be direct and it doesn't have to actually say what it is that you do. People often use their names in their company name, things like that. An example of a name that's not direct would be like the Target store. You know, everybody knows the Target symbol logo and the name Target. But Target doesn't really say anything about a retail store or clothing store. It doesn't explain what it is that they do, and that's okay because they've created a good brand. And then kind of like with McDonald's, also worldwide known brand, it's one name, it's somebody's name, doesn't say anything about fast food or hamburgers, but everybody knows what it is. And then another important thing about your name is that it should be copyright defensible. So you should check to make sure that other people aren't using that name, that you can copyright it. And also you want to check that your social media platforms for your name is available too.
Right. We're going to give a whole session. There's lots and lots to consider. In fact, I think with the blog posts that I've written about naming over the years and conversations, there's a whole book on the process of naming. Because so many people do this on their own, and there really isn't a whole lot of resources online. There's a lot of people who have written about the topic, but I've compiled a lot of information about how to go through the naming process, and I think that's going to be a really interesting session. So that's one of the reasons why you would want to use your own name, is it's immediately copyright defensible. But it's really not within brand, is it?
Okay. No, it's not. And you and I have been recently discussing the brand of, or the name of my company, Xander Management, which is my name, Xander, which is copyright defensible, but it's not really very descriptive and things like that. So I've been talking about doing a rebranding myself. And when I go through that rebranding process, we'll be talking about it in our podcast so people can kind of see how I'm doing that as I go along.
So there are a lot of people who will ask me, so Kevin, how do I make my brand with or my name within brand? And the example I give, one of the, I think, best brands in the world is the Nike brand, Nike shoes. And even though I'm pretty sure they didn't go through this process, I'd like to think, in my mind, they did.
Right.
I'd like to think that they did. So let's take the concept way back when the company was started and they had their very first pair of running shoes. And
right. They were probably drinking out of milk bottles back then.
Probably. Right, throwing Coke bottles around.
Right.
So let's start with the concept of running shoes. And if I want to come up with a name and I don't want to put any time or effort in it, I'm going to probably call it Joe's Running Shoes.
Right.
Something really, really bad.
Right.
Right. So let's not do that, shall we? Let's start veering away from the concept of our product or our company or our industry or, you know, something about us. And I want to stick with the brand, the hero brand. I want to be heroic and productive and super energetic, right? So running shoes, the shoes themselves aren't very energetic, but let's talk about the concept of running. You know, running shoes and running are very, very close to each other conceptually. And then I'm going to keep veering away, but staying true to that hero brand, running, racing. Racing is even more energetic, right? Running and racing. And then I want to picture myself winning at a race, right? So that's even more energetic. So racing to winning. We're now four steps out from running shoes. And we're taking these tiny steps conceptually from one concept to the next. But I'm staying true to the brand concept, and I'm veering away from the product. So I'm going to take another step, winning to victory, and then one more step, victory to the goddess of victory. And Amy, who is the goddess of victory?
Nike.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 steps, and then that last one to Nike. So 7 steps to go from running shoes to Nike, and that's pretty awesome. And let's imagine instead of the hero archetype, they were using the mother archetype. So instead of going for victory and sweaty people and energetic ideas, we'd be going more for, like with shoes, would be something like comfort, right? Or reliability or something like that. And it would change the ideas as you're taking steps away from that original idea. And that's where all the good stuff is. The farther away that you get away from a name like Joe's Running Shoes, and more along the lines of the ideas behind the emotion, that's where you get the good stuff. So again, yeah, we're going to have a whole session on this topic.
Yeah, naming really is fascinating just because I'm really into words and things like that. And it's such an interesting thing to think about, and it takes so much time.
Right. So our next identity element is the logo. This is heart of hearts to mine. I think designing a logo, of all the things that I do, all the creative work that I do and web work and brand strategy work, I think logo design is absolutely the hardest. It's very, very hard to get an elegantly simple design. And again, we're going to have a whole session on this. But if you think about what goes into a logo, you know, what kinds of shapes are you choosing? Linear versus curvilinear, or how complex is it? How much detail goes into it? You know, what are the concepts that go into it? What are the colors that you're using? Do you have a narrow color palette or a wide color palette? Are the colors saturated or desaturated? So all of these design issues definitely affect the emotion of how people feel when they see this new logo, and that supports the brand. So the logo is one of the critical elements. But I think that the logo is probably, from a brand perspective, is second to the tagline. And I think the tagline is where we can get the most brand energy in our identity. So, Amy, tell us about taglines.
Sure. So often people get taglines and slogans confused. They are two different things. Your tagline should be very short. The shorter, the better. Just a few syllables, few short words. And it's something that usually accompanies your logo, and your branding. A slogan is longer, has a little bit more descriptive, and a company can have several slogans. Sometimes they have a different slogan for each ad campaign that they're doing and things like that. But your tagline stays consistent through all of your branding. And so a really great example, again, one of our favorite brands is Nike, and their tagline is "Just Do It." It's three syllables, eight letters. It has nothing to do with shoes. It has everything to do with the hero brand.
Yeah, it's a powerful thing, and that concept of having lots and lots of brand, and having it be really brief, and having that result in what we call velocity. That concept is super important to us when we write taglines. And once again, we'll be having a whole session on taglines. I'm looking forward to that one a lot.
Right. Yeah. You helped me come up with the tagline for my company, which is "Words Matter." I really like that tagline. It's short. It's very descriptive of what I do. I'm a writer. You know, words are important to me in content, and I just love it. And I'm so grateful for you for helping me come up with that tagline.
I just hope it's defensible.
Well, right.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So after the tagline, the next thing that's really important part of your identity are the images that you use. And I'm going to let you talk about that a little bit, Kevin, because that's your area of expertise.
Well, I think this is the one that's probably the easiest for people to understand. You know, they say a picture speaks 1,000 words, right?
Right.
And the idea behind this from a brand perspective is, if you're really effectively conveying your brand, you're telling a story about yourself. You're telling a story about your products and services. And that storytelling is very easily supported with imagery. And because of bandwidth increases over time, over the last decade or so, we now have a very strong expectation that not only are our online experiences visual, they're also video, not just static images, but there's been a massive shift in the last 5 or 7 years towards video as a part of our presentations. So images and video, static photos and videos are a very powerful way of conveying the brand emotion.
Right. A really good example of this would be, we talk about a bicycle company. Sometimes we use that as an example. If we were going to have a bicycle company, same product, bikes, but we can change it to represent all 12 of the archetypes. So if you had, say, a mother archetype bike company versus the hero archetype or the explorer archetype bike company, the images that you would use for the mother would be families taking bike rides and bike helmets and safety and these nice leisurely rides through the countryside.
But
and
the bike's still in that photo, right?
Right, the bike. Yeah, exactly. The product doesn't change. But if you had, the explorer archetype, you would be using pictures of like mountain biking and trail riding and ruggedness and things like that. And it's still same bike, but just different imagery.
Excellent, excellent. And our next identity element are fonts. Tell us about fonts.
So fonts are pretty exciting. A lot of people like you who do design and things like that have, you know, libraries of thousands and thousands of fonts. Most of us are just familiar with the ones that come in Microsoft Word, you know, Arial, Times New Roman, things like that. Boring. I know. Super boring. Yeah.
Well, okay. No, it's an interesting point that you talk about designers. My sister-in-law is a retired, very accomplished designer. She worked for a big agency in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I look at the couple of thousand fonts that I have on my computer, and I'm very happy with my couple of thousand fonts. But I think she had her external hard drive that she had just for her fonts was like a terabyte.
Wow.
Yeah, just
how would you even know everything that you had in there? That's so many.
There are applications that are specifically for organizing and categorizing your fonts so you can find them quickly.
Wow.
Yeah. So fonts, there's a concept within fonts that I think is important to understand. And not everybody knows this, but it's a little learning moment here. If you take a look at fonts, sometimes you'll see ones that are very straight and the tips of each stroke of the font, they're plain on the end, where others, they have a little knob on the end. So if I take a look at a letter, the capital A, it starts out in the lower left and it's like a tent and then it ends on the lower right. Well, the tips on the ends of those things, if they have a little knob on the end, that's called a serif. And ones without serifs are called sans serif, you know, from the French or Latin, without a serif. And when you look at that, you go, oh, yeah, I guess those things are there. You may not have noticed them before, but when you put a serif on a font, when you have a serif font, it has a more conservative, older school feel, generally. And the ones without have a more contemporary feel. So if you think about this idea, conservative versus contemporary, that can dramatically change the emotion behind that font face, right?
Right. So the serif fonts kind of remind me when we were younger and we would write notes back and forth to each other. I don't know if boys did this, but girls always tried to make their letters really fancy. And we'd write little bubbles and circles on the edges of our letters and things like that. And that reminds me of when we used to do that in class and make our notes all fancy.
I would just put little hearts over the eyes.
Right. I know. Over the eye and Kevin.
That's right. Okay. We're going a little over the top there. Too much information.
Right.
Okay, another part of the font is the weight of it. You know, most fonts, I wouldn't say most, but a lot of fonts have multiple weights. Some fonts, when you download the font face to install on your computer, it might have 8, 10, 15, or even more different weights and styles, you know, whether it's in italics or not, whether it's medium or bold or, you know, block or, you know, super heavy, you know, those kinds of weights really matter when you're trying to convey emotion. And then, of course, tell us about overall design. I mean, that's just the look and feel is important, right?
Yeah. Yep. Your fonts that you use can be all caps or all lowercase. They can have a playfulness feel to it. I mean, one of the more common ones that people might associate with playfulness would be like that Comic Sans font or, you know, things like that. There's just so many things that you can do with fonts and so many things to consider when picking the fonts that you're going to use for your identity.
Right. And when you're picking fonts for like a, let's say a web page presentation or a brochure, there's a difference in which font face and style and weight that you would pick for a header versus the body copy, where you might pick a really super heavy, bold, block, all caps, sans serif font for your header, but a very roundish serif font that's not too conservative for the body copy, and that the play off of each other, the difference, the dramatic difference between those two really makes the headers pop out off of the page. And the two selections that you make, how they interact with each other, affects how people see your presentation. So that's important.
Right. So all this to say about all these things about fonts is the main point about this is that there is really a lot to consider when picking a font. And we encourage you to spend some time thinking about it, possibly get some advice from a designer or somebody who knows a little bit more about that. And also you need to consider like readability online when you're thinking about things on your website and things like that. Some fonts are just easier to read than others.
Do you think we'll be doing a whole session on that?
Yeah, probably. We keep saying we're going to do a whole session on all these things, but we're just doing the highlights of all the main points of what identity is. So the last main part of your identity would be the colors that you choose. And as we all know, colors evoke energy and feelings and so many things. And colors are really important too. They are, like I said, they're a great way to evoke emotions, which is what we're talking about with our branding. And like you've said, Kevin, there's a whole industry based on color theory and, like psychologists use it for different things. I mean, like fast food restaurants are usually bright primary colors. They say that encourages people to be quick and eat faster and get out of there. I mean, the fast food, you know, they, home designers will say, you know, use really soothing, quiet colors in your bedroom and things like that to promote good sleep. I mean, there's just so many psychological elements that go along with colors.
Going back to my degree, I got a minor in fine art, and one of the classes that I had to take was on color theory. And this is back pre-internet, pre-computers, pre-PCs, I'll say. Not pre-computers, I'm not that old.
With milk bottles.
With milk bottles. But the class just blew me away. I was just totally entranced by this thing that I'd never been exposed to before or had even considered before, that two colors sitting next to each other can interact with each other so dramatically and then just swap one color and have it change everything. So how colors interact and how they can negate each other, or how one color can be perceived as two different colors depending on its context. And it just really blew me away. So I know that in the real world, though, we have this issue of how does it fit within brand. And you know, I know that we have this mutual client that has a good story. Tell us about Lisa.
Sure. So Lisa Fisher is a wonderful business coach, a good friend of mine, and she went through our brand strategy session with us. She defined her archetype and lots of things. And this is something that a lot of our clients ask us once they understand the importance of having a brand archetype. And once they choose one, they're like, well, do we have to redo everything of our company? No, not necessarily. But there are some things that you can tweak sometimes that will make what you're doing more on brand. And for Lisa, we were talking about her colors, and she picked, she couldn't decide between two archetypes, which is often what happens. But as you know, we don't allow people to have two. We say you have to have one because that's the whole point of being razor focused and having a strong brand. But you can take two archetypes and kind of mash them together and come up with a new one. And so that's what she did. She was trying to decide between the neighbor archetype and the hero archetype, which is a common theme that we find with businesses. And what she decided on was she wanted to be like Wonder Woman, because she really is a Wonder Woman. She's a champion for female business owners. She's a business coach, and that's kind of her niche. And so she said, well, if I'm the Wonder Woman archetype, does that mean that I have to have Wonder Woman's colors of blue, red, and yellow? Because I really like the purple and the blue that I'm currently using. And what I said to her was like, no, not at all. You don't have to change your colors. But if you pick a purple, think about what kind of purple Wonder Woman would use. Even though that's not one of her main colors, would she pick a soft pastel color purple, or would she pick a bold, rich, like royal purple? And that's where you can really fine tune these identity elements to fit within your brand.
Yeah. And what you suggested to her is exactly how we will suggest to people that they consider all of these. Go from the gut. We didn't give her exact advice. Lisa, you should use Pantone color, you know, C6329. No, we didn't give her an exact number. We told her to use her gut. How does this make you feel? How do you think this will make other people feel? And if you don't know, ask them. You know, so going with your gut is really, really important in this process of establishing brand.
Absolutely.
So what you said, that those were the main ones. There are six main identity elements, but there's tons of other ways that people get identified. or can be recognized. And I think one of the most interesting ones in the world of brand is the concept of smell, of scent. And it is absolutely the most powerful emotion that evokes memory.
That is so true about smell. I don't know about you, but there are certain smells for me that just trigger things. Like my grandmother was a really pivotal, important person in my life growing up. I spent a lot of time at her house, and her house always smelled like really good toast. She made amazing grilled cheese sandwiches with this toast. And every time I smell toast, I think of my grandma. It's just, I can't help it. It's just so ingrained in my memory of her.
Right.
I think we all can identify with that. We have something that reminds us of some person or some place or some time in our life. And so that, with that being said, companies that do adopt particular smells are very successful with those. And some examples of those, you just told me about this recently. I didn't even realize this, but Verizon has a patented smell that they pump out in a lot of their stores. I don't know if they do it in all of them, but a lot of them, it's like this floral musky scent that they've patented. That's the Verizon smell.
Right.
So that's really interesting. And then you're also telling me too about Eddie Finn ukuleles. They're associated with like a pina colada smell, which makes sense. You think about
right.
ukuleles playing on the beach, maybe like in Hawaii or something.
Right,
they have
right.
that feel to it. And then also like that, like, you know, flip-flop stores, beach shops, things like that often smell like coconut or, you know, suntan lotion. That's
right.
a really good, I mean, if you smell coconut oil or suntan lotion, you immediately just think of the beach and summer and that kind of stuff.
So years ago, the very first time I heard this concept of patenting a smell, I think it was the Hilton hotel chain that they have like a jasmine, a very floral fragrant jasmine smell that is just in their lobbies. But regardless of the smell that you use, I mean, these were all done by design, but it doesn't always have to be by design, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, some things are just like really happy coincidences. I mean, I think most of us have experienced going into a restaurant and leaving that restaurant smelling like the food. And that happened, like Starbucks, it's such a powerful, really thick coffee smell. And I tend to have meetings at Starbucks or another local coffee shop here. And even if I'm only there for half an hour and drink my latte, I smell like coffee the whole day, like my hair and my coat. I don't mind. It's a great smell. I love coffee, but it just stays with you. It's just, you can't miss it.
So you're suggesting that all of our listeners create a smell so that it sticks to their customers all day long? Is that...
I don't know. I mean, that would be an interesting concept. But this was a really cool thing you were telling me too, and I don't remember what the company was, but you were saying there was a company that used a pine scent in their ink for their printed ads.
Oh,
so like when you opened up the magazine,
well, it's not just pine. It's they had a whole series of smells that could be infused into the ink. So if you're had a picture of a forest, you could use the pine scented ink. Or if you had a picture of a chocolate glazed, you know, Boston cream donut.
Right.
You could do chocolate smell, you know.
It's like scratch and sniff brands.
Yeah, it's like, you know, rubbing that perfume strip on my neck inside the magazine.
I think I'd rather smell pine opening a magazine than perfume. I don't know.
Right.
I love pine.
Right.
Yeah. So scent, definitely very powerful. Something to think about.
And similar to scent, right next to it is the concept of taste. Right. Not often that we patent tastes, but that certainly can be done. And there are certainly a lot of products out there that have done that. I know the most obvious one that everybody will immediately go, oh, yeah, that's right, is the number of toothbrush companies that flavor their product with mint. But there are some exceptions to that, like the Lactona toothbrushes. They flavor some of their products with strawberry flavor. And I think that would probably go better with the kids. But just the idea that you can flavor your product if it's going to actually be put into the mouth, or, you know, having a patented flavor for food, I think that's a tough one. But I'm sure we could come up with examples. But taste is super important in the concept of memory and evoking emotions, for sure.
Right. And I think you also brought up another good point is any of these elements of identity you can use to really stand out from your competition. Like with the toothbrushes, everybody does mint, so Lactona decided to do strawberry. And right. that's another thing that we talk about with even just picking your brand archetype, to pick something very different from what your competitors are doing. We'll talk about that as we get more into things. But that's just another thing to consider with each identity element. What are your competitors doing and how can you be different?
Right. So we're winding down here. We got a couple more identity elements. The next one is sounds or music.
Sure. I mean, everybody can think of a jingle or something that sticks in their head. People have their, you know, for their commercials and things like that. Or the types of music or sounds that you use too can just evoke an emotion or a feeling. You know, like one of my daughter's favorite stores is Hot Topic for clothes. And when you go in there, they're always pumping like heavy metal or dance music or things like that. And the store's kind of aggressive. There's a lot of black, there's a lot of concert t-shirt bands, things like that. And that it definitely goes with the music, it goes with the feel of the store.
And so the music at Hot Topic is different than the music used for Hot Pockets.
Well, that's true. Hot Pockets. Yeah, for sure.
See, you remembered it.
Yeah. 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 Oh, there's some. Sometimes it doesn't even matter how annoying they are. You're going to remember them.
In fact, people will talk about how annoying. Oh, I hate that jingle. It's like, well, yeah, but.
You remembered it.
Yeah, it's right. Like, what's Empire Carpeting? You know, 800. Yes, I don't want to sing it, but but you'll always remember that phone number because right. it's built into the jingle, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So sounds. So the next, there's shapes and there's textures. I was at a networking event Tuesday, and this woman handed me her business card, and it was velvety. It was so cool. Like, I had never felt a business card like that. I was like, oh, I really like this. I was just like, I held it the whole night because I was like, wow, this is really cool. So I was going to check that out for, you know, possible future textures for business cards. That's just one thing that you can do with textures, shapes, things like that. I've often got like a square business card as opposed to a rectangle one. And that always stands out in my stack that sits there. I can see it right away. It almost looked, and it was an artist that gave that to me. And it looked like a paint chip that you would get. It was really cool. Very creative that she did that.
With regard to packaging, we're going to talk about packaging here in a bit, but the concept of shape, you know, you have a challenge with a business card. You need to keep it to this roughly the same shape as an old school business card, because where people store them, how they use them, right? So I saw a really unique example. Have you ever seen the little mini CDs that get popped into the middle, the smaller slotted channel inside a CD player?
Oh, yeah, it's like a 45 record.
Right, exactly right. But if you cut the two edges off of the two sides of that circle and make it roughly the same shape as a business card, it still works. And so, not that you would actually cut them off, but you can actually buy these things. They're roughly shaped like a business card, but it's an actual CD.
Oh, that'd be a cool business card.
Yeah. So you could put, you know, you put the information printed on the front on the label, but when a person pops it into the computer, they can actually watch a video or, you know, I thought that was pretty fascinating. So that's a combination of shapes and textures and
sound
and a video. And talk about a powerful way of conveying a brand as opposed to just handing someone a business card, right?
That'd be a really good for like a videographer or somebody to do something like that.
Right. And so packaging is hugely important.
Right. So one of my favorite companies, the way they package stuff. We both agree that less packaging is better. We're both earth friendly and we like to see green things. You know, less packaging, tons of packaging really irks me. But I really love the way that Apple packages their products. It's just an experience. Like the way their boxes open and you just like lift off the lid and then this other flap reveals your new phone. And it's just like, it's like opening a present. It's just, their packaging is so unique to any other packaging. And you can tell they've put a lot of thought into it and it's different. Just like their archetype is just, you know, they go against the status quo. That's part of their thing. And their packaging is really cool. I will admit it's still too much packaging, but it's still a really cool experience opening an Apple product.
It's beautiful packaging. It's really beautiful and elegantly designed. So it's part of that experience. But if you were trying to create this green, environmentally friendly company and product, you might not want to take that approach. But there's a million different ways that you can do it. But certainly how you package your product definitely reinforces your brand.
Absolutely. So we've covered a lot of identity pieces today, and I hope it gives our listeners some things to think about. Think about each section of your identity and how it relates to your brand and supports your brand. So just to wrap up, you know, you need to pick an archetype and embrace that first, because that's going to dictate all the different parts of your identity elements, things that you might be able to change or tweak or update. You know, could just consider each one in a new light when you pick your new archetype. And then, we touched a little bit about this, but one thing to understand is that your identity, except in rare cases, is not seen out of context. Usually people will see like a logo with your name that's like on a hat or a shirt or something like that. So each individual piece of your identity should support your brand as a whole and not necessarily have to stand on its own.
Right. So if the logo is next to a photo in the context of a brochure with all those words and the trifold layout, the logo by itself on that piece is almost meaningless in the context of that overall piece. Right.
Right.
So that's what you meant by out of context.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So the listeners are saying, well, if I have to embrace my archetype first, how do I get my archetype? Which is a great question. So if you go to brandarchetypes.com/questionnaire, you will find our questionnaire. That's a great starting point. And to take the questionnaire, answer those 96 brutally obscure questions, and the results that will be given to you immediately are the 12 archetypes, the basic archetypes that we work with in chronological order based on the answers that you just gave. Not to say that you're going to pick the one at the top. It's just kind of a launching point, but you'll get a really good idea on the kind of direction that you might be heading. And if you establish that archetype, that brand emotion, very powerfully, one that you can embrace, and then go back and evaluate all these identity elements, I think that you'll find that there are things that you're going to want to reconsider. There may be even extreme cases where people say, wow, our company name is really bad. We really should change it. And that has actually happened numerous times over the past 15 years. I've had probably a dozen clients go through this process and say, wow, we really should change our name.
Right. And immediately people's usual immediate reaction when they think about changing their company name is, ooh, no, I could never do that. People know my name. And that may be the case with some people, but sometimes digging a little bit deeper and considering it and thinking about it, it could be a really good move for your company, depending on many factors.
We would absolutely recommend to do that cautiously, throwing away what's called brand equity, the value that you have built up over time, your recognition and how people feel about you based on that name. You would have to have a really, really good reason, a really, really bad name to throw it away and start from scratch. But basically what you just said, Amy, is you're taking 3 steps back, but 10 steps forward after that.
Right.
That your net gain of how your brand works in the world is going to be a lot better if it's done right. So our bottom line is do the brand first, identity second, and then make sure that all your identity elements support your brand emotion.
Right. And we'd love to hear from any listeners that do have had an experience of changing a major part of their identity, whether it was their name or their logo, how that went, your thought process behind doing it, or just your thoughts on what we talked about today and different parts of your brand that you're thinking about, or rather pieces of your identity that you're thinking about updating or changing. We love to hear your story on that. It's very fascinating to us to see the progression of a company's brand. Right. So you can visit us on our Facebook page and comment on there or send us a note from our website.
Very good. Thanks for your time, Amy.
Thank you, Kevin. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.